move on to a report and possible discussion on the quarterly portfolio report by BlackRock Merrill Lynch. John Hall's chief financial officer.
I'll just introduce, I'm just here to introduce all the various people here today. We have Jeff Beers and Jeff Hewlett, who are here from Merrill Lynch / BlackRock to do the presentation they normally do on the portfolio performance for this last quarter. Y'all can come on up.
Morning. I will go through a few of the performance pages, and then I'll just kind of give an update where we are in the market and the economy, explain part of the performance. We go ahead two more pages. One more. Okay, this is just the asset allocation breakdown. On the right side is the allocation as it was at the end of May. Pretty big difference there between the snapshot on the one on the left, which was the end of February. At that point, it was 51% equity, 46% bonds, and 3% cash. Fast forward to the end of May, we were at 57% equity as a result of equities doing much better over that period. Bonds down to 41% and cash equivalents at 2. And the total account value plus accrued income was just over $20 million. The next page. This is the top 10 holdings. Really has not changed from last time we met. If you go through to the next page, kind of look at the breakdown by sector. Our overweights and underweights are still the same. They've just changed in degree. We're still overweight energy. Other large overweight is in healthcare and information technology. We remain underweight financials. We're just not as underweight as we were. And actually, that's helped us over the last 12 months. That really hurt performance over the trailing quarter and partly year to date by having that underweight financials and part of our exposure within that, as the banks have really rallied off of a really oversold level back earlier in the year. On the next page, we look at the fixed income breakdown. This really hasn't changed much either. We still remain underweight U.S. Treasuries. About market weight agencies. We have mortgages in the portfolio that are really not in benchmark, so it's an overweight on mortgages, and then we're overweight corporate bonds. Our feeling is that we like to continue like spread product. Treasuries are still a little overpriced in our opinion. The average credit quality remain high quality, AA. Duration is 4.6 years with an average maturity of 5.58. It gives us an average yield of maturity at the end of May, 3.64%. And an average current yield of 4.76. Then, next page, the last page I'll go through on this report is the performance. And looking at the chart towards the bottom, the total portfolio, which is in that gray area, for the last 3 months, positive 10.29%. Equities up almost 17%. The fixed income portion up just over 3%. However, the S&P 500 over the same time period up 25%. The bond benchmark up just over 2%, and that blended benchmark at the bottom, the alphabet soup, as I call it, the S&P 500 60%, and then the government mortgage benchmark up 15.84 over that time period. Year-to-date basis, down slightly positive into May, however, as of today, we're positive. Down 0.63, equities down 3%, bonds positive 1.81, again, S&P up 2.96 and the blended benchmark up just over 2. Now, we are still beating both the bond and equity and the blended benchmark over the trailing 12-month period, trailing 2-year, 3-year, 5-year period. So I did want to kind of touch on kind of where we were, then kind of fast forward. We've been, a lot has changed over the last quarter and even the last 12 months. If we go back to right at the height of the crisis, the S&P 500's dividend yield was higher than the 10-year Treasury and the 30-year Treasury. Equity prices have somewhat normalized, and now you do not have that case. S&P dividend yield's around 2.6. The 10-year Treasury is now at 3.7, roughly. Off-the-run Treasuries, that simply means just not the current Treasury that's out there traded or quoted as the 2-year or 5-year. They were trading 20, 25 basis points higher than another Treasury that's basically the same maturity. That's a very, very concerned fixed income market when you can pick up 25 basis points on the exact same credit. It's just a different maturity with a little less liquid. And at that time, we had 25% of the stocks in the S&P 500 were trading below $10 a share. Now only 10% of the S&P 500 companies are trading below $10 a share. So fast forward to today, go back to March 6th at the bottom of the market. The S&P traded at 666. Right now it's around 979 for a return of about 46% off the low. Credit spreads have been narrowing, therefore that's why our fixed income returns have been so good. We've had a lot of spread product in there, like the corporates and the mortgages. So the credit market seems to be normalizing. Good news is a lot of people think that the recession ended in second quarter of this year. We're one of those groups. You have commodities rallying, emerging markets are rallying, and then you look at the leading economic indicators, the PMI, consumer confidence, consumer spending, company surveys, and then now we're in the middle of earnings season. Seems to be going okay. It's not blowout by any means, but earnings seem to be surprising about at a normal level, if not a little bit higher. So some of our reasons that we think that we're going to continue to see growth, and this is the same thing I talked about last time, it's the tremendous amount of monetary and fiscal stimulus that's been applied. Just going back over the last 2 years, as of this morning, we've now had over 700 policy responses to this economic recession and financial meltdown. Oil is, even though it's up from where it was, oil's still down considerably from where it was a year ago. Oil was trading at $124 a barrel at this time last year. Global interest rates are down 240 basis points from where they were. Global interest rates are actually more important than what the Federal Reserve is doing here in the United States. So the global rate's down 240 basis points. That usually works with a lag. That should indicate higher economic growth in the future. Then we have a very steep yield curve. The thing that's probably weighs heaviest on our mind is that we still think that we're going to be in this deleveraging environment where both corporations and individuals are electing to pay down debt and save money. We're seeing savings rate rise, so that's going to take some money out of the economy as people slow down on purchases. We still have the feelings from that wealth destruction that we've experienced not only the last 12 months, but the last 12 years really, where equity markets have gone nowhere, slightly negative. And then you have income that's still going to be under pressure. Unemployment is high, still going higher, although we see that the initial claims for unemployment seem to be improving. And then valuations. They were very, very attractive earlier this year, and you have a market that's up almost 50% from the low. Valuations just aren't as attractive as they were. So our expectations going forward, we think we're going to see earnings growth 5 to 7%. We still think that stocks will outperform both bonds and cash. Within the bond market, we continue to like spread products. So we continue to emphasize corporate bonds and mortgages. We think real GDP for next year is going to be between 2 and 3%, with inflation still very contained at 1%. I think 10-year Treasury probably moves higher in terms of yield, probably a full percent higher by the end of next year. And then Fed funds, which are currently about zero, we think the Fed will finally start tightening monetary policy into mid-2010, maybe ends the year at about a 1% Fed funds rate. Still be a very steep yield curve and pretty stimulative policy. So just a touch on the underperformance here. Go back to when Bob Dahl took over the process. We have had four different time periods where, and I would consider this fairly considerable underperformance for a quarter. We've done this four other times, and it's happened around inflection points in the economy. It happened in the fourth quarter of 2000, the fourth quarter of 2002, the first quarter of 2008, now the second quarter of 2009. And our process has a very, over half of it is very quantitative in nature. At these inflection points in the economy, sometimes we do have a period of underperformance. However, every time that we've had that, a period of underperformance like you see here in the quarter, we've gone on to outperform over the trailing 12 months or over the next 12 months as the process finally gets back in sync with the market. And I will just say that we've had a high quality bias inside the portfolio, and that really did hurt over the inside the second quarter. Just to give you a data point, from the low around March 9th to May 7th, the S&P 500 was up 38%. However, if you dissect that and look at S&P quality ratings, the top quality companies rated by S&P 500 were only up 22%. The lowest decile in terms of quality were up 145%. Okay, so the stocks that were off the most, obviously rallied the most, we did not have as much exposure there inside lower quality companies, and that's kind of what held back performance for the quarter. But again, I think that we're positioned well for growth going forward. And at that, I can open it up for any questions. I will apologize. I'm probably going to leave after my part is done. I'm going to try to get back to Dallas to catch a flight to go down to Brownsville for another board meeting. So, questions?
I noticed 14% of our assets are mortgages. Do you have any idea what credit quality might be in that package?
Yeah, they're AAA. These are agency-sponsored, so Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac mortgages. So they're not any sort of CMO, CDO. These are the high quality. These are the mortgages that the government's been buying in an effort to keep mortgage spreads down.
Any other questions or discussion?
Activity in the last quarter, as far as net buys and sells, were you a net buyer of equities?
No. And we keep the, even though you see them as one account, we keep them as two separate accounts from so we have not, you know, move money over from the bond account into our equity account to add up simply as a result. Now we could have used up some of our cash inside of our account, but I don't think it's been a huge net positive buy. We still have on target, we're running about 1.5% cash position in our, inside of our equity allocation. Mm-hmm.
Do you have an estimate of turnover ratio?
Historically, or for like what we see for this year?
This year, or last 12 months, whatever.
50-60%. Probably higher than it has been in the past. I think that's somewhat of a trading environment right now. We think that the market's a little overbought. So we've been, you know, we do a lot of trims and strength, and we add positions. We own more names than we have historically too. In the past we've been as low as 33 names. We're up at the higher end of our range in terms of the number of companies that we own.
Now, if I understood the question here was reallocating, so we've got, I think the target was like 60-40.
Correct.
And because equities were up and stocks were down, we weren't reallocating. And we've just allowed the price increase to reallocate itself.
Right.
Is that what I'm hearing?
We're about 59% as of today.
Okay.
With the equities increasing in value. You know, at the point, if we did have, you know, equities continue to rally and we get up towards the higher end of the stated band, and at that point we can start trimming from equities.
But what I'm trying to say is we did not reallocate. We've allowed the market to reallocate for us.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Address the BlackRock BGI merger.
Okay. During this quarter, BlackRock made a considerable purchase. We bought the asset management division from Barclays Bank, UK-based bank. It took our assets under management from about $1.3 trillion up to, we're going to be $2.4 trillion when this is completed in fourth quarter of this year. Complement to what we already have in place, BlackRock's mostly active management. We pick up a big piece, what we call passive strategy or ETFs. You might have heard of the Barclays iShares. They're the biggest player on the street in terms of ETFs and other passive approaches. So that's just going to probably increase our stable of offerings in the future now that we'll have another, you know, $1 trillion in assets under management. It's mostly in quantitative and passive strategies.
ETF is another word for indexed funds?
It's an exchange-traded fund. The most common one out there is, you know, say S&P 500. You can buy that as a mutual fund, like the Vanguard fund. Now, that only trades at the end of the day. So whatever mark that is on NAV at that day, it's the price you get. The difference with an ETF is it trades throughout the day, so you could get it at any different price during the day.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you.